Welcome back for another episode of The Starting Block. I'm Swain, the host of the show. And today, I wanted to go a little deeper. Typically on this show, we've talked to creatives and about being creative, drawing and painting and writing and doing all the things that creative people do and having a creative job. And I thought it would be helpful and interesting, quite frankly, to talk about, you know, grieving and loss when you have a creative job. You know, for those of us who don't have, you know, what would be considered an obviously creative job, like as a writer or as an artist, if you're dealing with personal things, you can kind of compartmentalize and kind of get through it. You know, you can phone it in, and there's a chance that no one will be the wiser. But I imagine, you know, when your job is to be creative and to emote and to pour yourself into the work, it can be hard when you've lost a loved one, lost someone close to you, and you're trying to work through those feelings. So I invited two friends on to talk about their experiences with loss and grief as creatives. First up is my friend Matthew Childers. Matthew is a comic book artist based out of North Carolina. He's currently writing and drawing a terrific self-published series called Moon Hunters, and I'll put a link to the series in the show notes for this episode. Matthew talks about the loss of his brother and how it affected his life and how it affected him in terms of his work and his outlook on his work. And I really appreciate Matthew being as honest as he was and as open as he was in his clip. And after Matthew is my friend Wilfredo Torres, otherwise known as Fred. Fred is also a comic book artist based out of the Atlanta area, and he's worked for Dark Horse and Dynamite and Image Comics. And Fred talks about the loss of his wife, Monica. Monica battled cancer for many years and ended up passing away a few years ago. And Fred talks about finding out that she was sick and what they were trying to do in the midst of all of it and when things got worse and the aftermath of it all. Anyway, I don't want to try to retell their stories here. My sincere thanks to Matthew and to Fred for both being, again, as honest and as vulnerable and as open as they were to share their stories, these very, very personal stories here on these microphones. You know, my goal with this show is not to be overly sad or morose or certainly to shine an unwanted light on someone's personal loss, but death is definitely something that we're all going to experience. And again, as creative people who have a creative job, I imagine it is even harder. So anyway, I hope you enjoy this episode. I do hope that it is helpful, and I hope you take something away from it that you can use.
My name is Matthew Childers. I'm a comic book illustrator, writer, and creator. I've mainly been working in the indie comic scene for probably about 5 years. I started out doing a comic called Adventures in Pulp and went on to do a story for Dynamite Comics for Army of Darkness, and then moved on, and in around late 2016 or mid-2016 decided to do my own book, write my own story called Moon Hunters, and working on the first issue probably late 2016 into 2017, and 2017 early on started drawing and writing the second issue. It takes me quite a while because I'm doing the whole thing myself, and I have a day job and kids and a family and whatnot. But around March, I think it was March 30th, 31st of 2017, I got a call from my mom that my brother was dead. Now, my brother, you know, my brother had kind of lived a hard life after high school. He wasn't one to make great decisions as far as, I guess you could call it, he had an alcohol problem. He had drug problems. And I guess we kind of always worried that something like this, that kind of phone call is going to come. But, I mean, he did go into the military for a while. He went into the Navy and was a CB, and went to Iraq. So, I mean, there was a point where he was trying to get his life together, but, you know, at the time his wife, I think, left him as he was, you know, abroad, and that kind of really threw him off course even more. And when he came back, I think a lot of what happened to him in Iraq really pushed him over the edge, and he was really, he battled with alcohol really bad and was in and out of rehab and had a car accidents and was arrested a few times. So, you know, there was this expectation that something bad was going to happen eventually. But what threw everybody off and what really just, you know, I guess made it worse was when I got the call, my mom said that, you know, your brother's dead, and I'm thinking, okay, and she goes, we think he was murdered. And that moment was just like, I just was like, what? And it come to find out that I guess he was at a party, and, you know, of course he was drinking. A lot of people were drinking, and we don't know the full details, but the whole story kind of comes towards that, you know, he something happened and he was trying to run away, and the people they think were responsible basically chased him down with a wooden board or something, some wooden object, and just beat him to death. And that's just hard. I mean, I try to think about it, and death to me is not something that I've ever dealt with well, not in the way most people, you know, most people do. I guess it's kind of feel very distant from it, but, you know, and like I said, dealing with the fact that I knew something was coming eventually from just the fact that he was unable to get past his addictions, you know, was there. But, you know, to think about the fact that, you know, I'm not thinking about the adult him, I think about the child him, the little boy that I used to play with and hang around with, and that little kid, you know, that's what I think about. And it, you know, that did hurt me quite a bit. But I think, and too, that it motivated me, because, you know, I was working on the Moon Hunters beforehand, and, you know, just trying to bring it to that, like, try to, some kind of connection there. There was no connection to him beforehand, but, you know, afterwards, especially with my kids, I really kind of got that sense of, I want to leave a legacy for them, you know, and, you know, because I'm not going to be here forever, you know. And I think about that little kid that I used to be hang around with, and that I remember as my brother, and, you know, what kind of legacy was he able to leave? And he did, you know, he didn't make the impact I think he would have wanted. So I want to do that for my kids. I want to leave them something. So that's kind of how he inspired me, you know, or how the whole thing inspired me to keep going and keep making stuff. I mean, I did at the time after all it happened. It took me a little while to, like, get back on track, to get back into making my book, you know, probably not as long as some, but it did take me some time, you know. There's just that moment afterwards where you just feel very numb to things. You just don't have that ability to get back on track easily. But once I did, you know, I mean, I had, after it happened, I thought, I was thinking of ideas for stories that were very much related to what happened, because there was a lot of mystery around what happened to him. I mean, at first they didn't know what happened, because there was a storm the night he died, and there was a lot of, the evidence was washed away. So there were very, you know, there were a lot of mysteries around what happened at the time, and that where he died, there's a lot of mystery to that area as it is, you know, and it kind of has inspired me. I think there will be a time when I probably write a story that, you know, deals with a lot of this. But, you know, all I can do now is kind of use, you know, some of my experiences with this to motivate me to finish up what I'm doing. Kind of, like I said, leave a legacy for my kids. I mean, I think all creatives should understand that we leave behind something, you know, and, you know, our time, our loved ones' time, it's all finite. And so we kind of create for them and for the next generation. And, you know, I want to leave something for my kids. I don't want to leave this world without that. So I guess that bit of mortality that I take from, you know, his death helps me make every day a little bit, you know, more meaningful. So I guess the best thing I can do is say thank you, Charlie, and I love you, bud, and I'll miss you.
My name is Wilfredo Torres. I'm a comic book artist, and Swain's asked me to come on and talk about working through grief and loss from a creative standpoint. When my late wife was first diagnosed with cancer, it wasn't long after we had decided that I'd be doing comics full time. So there was a moment of hesitation there where I kind of wanted to turn around and head back and to having a full time job with benefits and all of those things. But she was opposed to that. So I continued. I was working on, when she first got diagnosed, I was working on The Shadow for Dynamite, I believe. Her diagnosis definitely affected my work in the sense that working was also has always been a very solitary thing for me. So especially at that time, I tended to work late at night by myself. Door closed, everyone in the house is asleep. So you kind of can't help but start to kind of get in your head. So it definitely slowed me down. It was really challenging to stay focused, to stay on task, because I would just lose time. Just running scenarios through my head. She was in treatment for a really long time, so relatively compared to some other people. So I was able to work through some of that and have more of a normal routine. And she had her good times and her bad times, and sometimes she'd come off of treatment and we thought it was okay. So, you know, I'd be more productive or my attitude would change. But I can look back at things that I worked on and know exactly what was going on when I drew that page. So it definitely, for me, affected what I was doing and had a huge impact on it. Monica was very involved in my comics work, so it was very rare that I was ever at a convention and she wasn't with me. So anytime I had to travel, she tended to travel with me. there was maybe a few odd, you know, free comic book day type deals where she was doing something else while I was sitting at a table. But as far as conventions, she was generally there with me. I didn't have to give up time in that sense. And of course, working from home allowed me a lot of time to be with her when she had to stop working. And we were both at home together and gave me time to go to appointments and treatment and infusions and radiation therapy and what have you. Towards the end, just before she passed, I was working with Mark Miller on Jupiter's Circle. And I'd been slow on that to begin with because she was, at the time, she had a collapsed lung. So she was basically running on one lung, and that made pretty much everything difficult for her. So I spent a lot of time with her just trying to take care of her and then balancing out that. And I tried to keep my work, the bulk of it got done while she was asleep. But I had a lot of confidence that she was going to be able to beat it. So I tried not to get into my head too much, but then when it went bad quickly. We went into an appointment, which was just a general routine thing, and they decided to keep her because her numbers were off, and she was having a lot of fluid buildup in her lungs, because at the time, that was part of our nightly ritual, was I had to use this thingamajig that they gave us to literally, you know, drain fluid from her lungs that would just build up over the course of the day. But that fluid buildup just kept getting worse and worse. So they admitted her and they kept her overnight. And she sent me home to work. You got to go work. So I went home, worked. And the next day, things just kind of kept getting worse and worse. And progressively, she was just in a lot of pain. So she was under pain medication more and more. So she couldn't really talk that well. She wasn't awake and alert for very long. Until she was basically at the point where the hospital told us, you know, there's nothing more we can do. And they were, going to move her to hospice. So I went home to go grab some of her things, and she passed in the ambulance on the way to hospice. So Mark was awesome. I'd let him know before, when she'd gotten admitted, that I wasn't going to be able to, you know, be turning pages in. So of course he was like, you know, take care of your your wife, and when she passed, he, you know, said, "Don't worry about it. This is gonna be here for you when you're ready to go again." So I was pretty much, I was shut down. I didn't do anything for at least a month. After she passed, I don't remember even going into my office. I basically would go from my bedroom to the kitchen, and that's about it. And once I got started back into it, it was weird. I had a whole big weird kind of mix of emotions, because there was a time there where I resented the work, because I'd had so many nights where I was at my desk working, where I could have been, you know, in bed with her watching TV or just sleeping, or, you know, so that made it challenging, because it was in a weird way, I was almost angry at the work. I didn't want to do it. And it took me a little while to realize it was because of what I was doing that I was able to spend as much time with her as I had, because had I been working just a regular 9-to-5 job, I'd have been out of the house all day. So it afforded me a lot more time. So then, you know, then the anger kind of changed over to gratitude. I've always had a problem with depression. So working through depression and then actual grief was tough. And I had a lot of people that gave me opportunities and went to bat for me, and I let a lot of people down. I tried. But I keep wanting to be one of these guys that has that on and off switch, that looks at the work in a very, I don't want to say clinical way, but just a very blue collar, you know, workman like attitude, where I just have to sit down and draw this page. It's a, you know, a flying dog in a spaceship or whatever, and there's no great mystery to it. I'm just gonna, I just need to put this down on paper. But I'm not. There's not that switch for me. I have to finagle it and romance it a little bit. And it just, you know, not being able to turn it on and off is an impediment.
I don't know if I quite agree that it's an impediment to care about your work really deeply in the way that Fred is describing. It doesn't make you a very workmanlike artist, but you know, but every lane isn't for everybody to travel in. So, and just to put a little happy punctuation on Fred's story, he met a terrific person a couple of years ago, and got remarried, and seems to be doing really well, and I'm super happy for him. So. For him and his new wife. A big thank you again to Fred and to Matthew for sharing this very, very, very personal part of their lives with me on this pod. And I hope that everyone who's listening, again, took something from it that they found useful. None of us are ever going to be able to avoid death and losing a loved one. So anyway, I hope this podcast gave you something to think about.